Welcome to the Jerry Robinson Radio Show, where we spend an hour every week confronting the lies of the age. With Jerry Robinson, the Chief Economic Strategist for Makers Group Financial and the founder and director of Jerry Robinson Ministries International, a Christian nonprofit organization dedicated to challenging believers to think and thinkers to believe. As a trained economist and ordained Christian minister, Jerry is the key economic speaker at the Stealing the Mind Bible Conferences, a columnist for WorldNet Daily, and the author of the best-selling book, Bankruptcy of Our Nation. And now your host, Jerry Robinson.
Well, thanks once again, Jay. Welcome once again to this week's edition of the Jerry Robinson Show, a weekly radio show intentionally designed to educate, equip, and empower you, the listener, on the important geopolitical, economic, and cultural trends that are literally reshaping our globe each and every day. I'm going through this entire stack of this news. What I typically do on a weekly basis is I'll print out several stories that catch my eye during the week, and I'll just go through with a highlighter. And this week in particular, I have probably went through two highlighters trying to keep up with all of the things that are happening all around the world. You know, we have a lot of things to get into in today's radio program. You know, one of the things I think that many people are beginning to wake up to is the fact that this nation is in trouble. And I wrote the book Bankruptcy of Our Nation. I remember when I went out and I spoke about this topic, Bankruptcy of Our Nation, people would say, well, when will the United States be bankrupt? The answer always was and always will be that the United States is bankrupt. It's not going bankrupt. It's not staring bankruptcy in the face. It is bankrupt. It has no money. It is borrowing Peter to pay Paul, so to speak. And right now we are seeing an extreme abuse of money printing privileges on the part of the United States government. Through the Federal Reserve, we see an immense abuse of federal power. And of course, now it's even throwing us now into a very chaotic place where the states are having to figure out how to even protect themselves from the out of control federal government that we see now. And of course, it's not only endangering you, the listener, it's endangering your children, it's endangering your grandchildren. The experiment that was called America has now morphed into a very, very uncertain thing. We don't know exactly where things are heading, but we do know this, that all throughout history, nations that have went down the path that we are going down have faced the same death. It's death by hyperinflation of the currency. It's death by debt. It's death by over-leverage of military bases all around the world. This is exactly what happened to Rome. This is not, we're basically taking the historic playbook and doing it all over again. So here we stand, and people would say, "Well, goodness gracious, what a depressing radio program this is." Well, to be honest with you, is that it's really not about being depressing or whether it's uplifting. The major thing is that we tell the truth, because the truth is what matters. And what we're dedicated to doing here is following the money. And unfortunately, we have a lot of abuse going on in many different areas of the country. And so we basically want to alert you to what's happening all around the United States economy, what you can do to protect yourself, what you can even do to profit. Remember that even in times of terrible economic crisis in the past, people have actually done okay whenever they've moved to types of assets that actually benefit. There are beneficiaries of bad monetary policy. There are beneficiaries that we can cling on to. So anyway, I say all that, and want to also introduce my co-host. Each and every week I'll be joined by one of the original coordinators of the National Tea Party Movement and the community outreach and new media director for our organization. Let me introduce my good friend, Jay Blevins. Jay, it's great to have you here with me this week.
Hey, thanks, Jerry. It's a great pleasure to be here with you on the Jerry Robinson Show. And we have a really, really terrific show this week. As always, we'll start with our weekly wrap of economic news from around the globe, and that'll be followed this week by a very special guest interview with Bob Chapman, the writer of The International Forecaster and a highly sought-after expert on international economics. Now, you can even get a free copy of his International Forecaster at www.theinternationalforecaster.com or by calling 877-479-8178. Now, that's going to be a great interview. He's going to have some really great insights for us. And then, of course, the next segment is always Jerry's weekly commentary. And this week, he's going to be talking about the recent ruling requiring the Federal Reserve to open its books and disclose the information on the bailout and stimulus monies. And then, of course, as always, we'll close with the listener questions of the week. and the road to a one world currency. But first, the weekly wrap. Welcome to the weekly wrap, where each week we get Jerry's insight on the most pressing and important global economic news from around the world. And our first story this week is really interesting. Looks like, according to Bloomberg, Obama pays more than Warren Buffett as the U.S. risks AAA rating. The bond market is saying that it's safer to lend money to Warren Buffett than to Barack Obama. And in my opinion, looks like Warren Buffett has been a lot more responsible in his spending practices than the government has anyway. Right, Jerry?
Yeah, this story caught my eye. As I was kind of leafing through the news this week, basically what this story says is that, as it turns out, U.S. debt is becoming pricier to issue than some AAA-rated companies. I mean, as I was reading through this story off of Bloomberg, it says the bond market is saying that it's safer to lend to Warren Buffett than Barack Obama. I mean, that's a great headline, isn't it?
It's an eye-catcher, for
that's
sure.
That's a sure way to get people to read your article. Well, it goes on and it talks about basically how all the G7 countries, except for Canada and Germany, will have debt-to-GDP ratios close to or exceeding 100% by 2014. Of course, this points to the fact that we are seeing a tremendous amount of debt all over the world, and the United States is just the current victim, of this. And of course, they're not a victim; they've caused their own problems. But last year, $2.1 trillion in borrowing by the government exceeded the $1.08 trillion issued by investment-grade companies, and that's the biggest gap on record. So we're obviously keeping a close eye on this. The story goes on and points out that the publicly held debt, which is currently our national debt, which is nearing $13 trillion, will zoom to, well past $20 trillion by 2020. That'll be basically, that's just going to be outrageous, to see what that's actually going to look like. And so, this, in the final analysis, I think this story indicates the growing mistrust that investors have towards the federal government. You can simply not turn you cannot pile on more and more debt and expect your creditors to turn a blind eye. Only a few decades ago, the U.S. stood as the world's greatest and largest creditor nation. Today, we stand as the world's greatest debtor nation. And the fact that no one has ever had the amount of debt, now not necessarily percentage-wise, but the amount of debt that we have. The U.S. is digging itself into a hole. So much so that Moody's, the credit rating agency, warned last week that the AAA credit rating of the U.S. is at risk of being downgraded if the nation fails to come to grips with its growing debt. It warned, and here's the quote, preserving debt affordability at levels consistent with AAA ratings will invariably require fiscal adjustments of a magnitude that, in some cases, will test social cohesion. And, of course, testing social cohesion evokes in your mind the idea of riots. It evokes in your mind the idea of civil unrest. The risk of default of the United States federal government is becoming increasingly more possible with every passing day. And this is because nations throughout history have learned that debt levels similar to what America has right now has led to the destruction of their currency and of their collective economies. The day of reckoning for the United States is coming, Jay.
Very, very sobering thoughts there, Jerry. All right, our next story comes from Bloomberg, dated March 24th. Bill Gross, the manager of the world's biggest mutual fund, says that the healthcare reform will add to rather than take away from the U.S. deficits and unfunded liabilities. Jerry, what does this mean in the long run?
Well, I mean, this is one of those things where we're going to end up spending 4 hours on a one-hour program if we begin opening up this national healthcare problem.
That's a big can of worms, that's for sure.
It's a huge can of worms. I mean, we're going to have a guest on next week who is a specialist in this area. In fact, he specializes in the healthcare industry. And he is going to talk to us about this particular bill, obviously, and talk about the ramifications of it. And he's going to be really helping small to medium-sized business owners. It's going to be a great interview next week. This week, I think this further cements in our minds. There was a story that came out on, I believe it was CNBC, that basically a co-founder of the Emergent Asset Management Hedge Fund had stated that basically the passage of the health care law shows that the U.S. empire is declining because it illustrates the fact that people expect the state to take care of them. And I think that's where we are here. It's this great society mentality. It's this social safety net mentality that entitlements have been the downfall of previous empires in the past. You know, Jay, you've been blogging a lot about the national healthcare, you know, ideas and all of this. You know, tell me what your thoughts are.
Well, Jerry, you know, as a Tea Party founder and as a conservative blogger who really feels like that we've stepped away from our roots of limited government, I look at this healthcare reform bill as perhaps one more nail in the coffin of the American dream of what America was meant to be. We're stepping out into the point, like where you said, where the general public is looking to the government to hand them something, to give them something, and personal responsibility has taken a back seat. People just want more, and they want it now. I call us the microwave generation because we have no patience, and we want it all, and we want it right now.
Well, and next week we'll delve into this topic much further, but it sure is telling, and we're going to keep our eyes on this, Jay.
All right. Now, our next story, this one's on the housing market from the businessinsider.com, dated March 24th. Another huge miss on housing. New home sales slip after everyone expected it to rise. There's more evidence that the housing is already rolling over as new home sales fell 2.2% in February versus expectations of a 1% gain. Jerry, is the subprime mortgage crisis of 2010 already starting?
Jay, it seems like this continues to happen over and over as few people really realize just how serious our financial situation is. As the story mentions, new home sales fell 2.2% in February versus the expectations of a 1% gain. When you add this to this week's disappointing existing home sales numbers and the mortgage application numbers, you get the feeling that someone out there is just simply not getting it when it comes to forecasting. I mean, what makes these numbers even more telling is that the home buyer tax credit that was extended is about to expire. I mean, under the new law, an eligible taxpayer must buy or enter into a binding contract to buy a principal residence on or before April 30th of this year. And they must close on the home by June 30th, 2010. You know, I've been pointing to 2010 and 2011 as the next quote-unquote subprime crisis flashpoint where option ARMs and alt A's, which we've discussed in the past, will become highly problematic in the mortgage industry and for obviously for borrowers. The real estate market is not looking good in many areas right now, and to make matters worse, the federal government is broke and it has no more bullets to shoot at this problem. So as you know, we're keeping a very close eye on the U.S. real estate market, and we'll keep you posted, Jay.
More sobering news there. Now, we're going to close this week with our weekly China story. We always have one from China, and this one's kind of interesting. It looks like, you know, the economy that we've looked at as being the strongest one is having some issues, too. This one comes from the China Daily, dated March 22nd. It says, trade deficit likely in March. The country will probably see a record trade deficit in March thanks to surging imports, the Chinese Minister of Commerce said on Sunday, while warning that Beijing will fight back if Washington labels China a currency manipulator. Now, Jerry, I find it amusing that the U.S. government keeps accusing China of manipulating currency, but isn't that what the whole petrodollar system is all about?
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole can of worms there. China's turned from a trade surplus of about $20 billion to a trade deficit of more than $8 billion here in March. And, you know, this deficit reverses a month-long trend for China's trade balance that has seen an uptick for most of the mid to late 2000s. But during the first 2 months of this year alone, China's trade surplus has already fallen by over 50%. And this is just another story in the growing tension that is building between the U.S. and China. For years, China has been holding its currency artificially low against the U.S. dollar. And many in Washington have subtly accused China of being a currency manipulator. And, you know, while this is true, it's also akin to the pot calling the kettle black, as you mentioned. I mean, if anyone's manipulated a currency, it's the United States of America. The U.S. has long manipulated its position as the holder of the key reserve currency around the globe through the petrodollar system. And what makes this dangerous is that the U.S. may be seeking, and with China here, here's what my concern is. The U.S. may be seeking to take a protectionist route by blaming China for its own growing currency and debt crisis. It may be pointing at China, basically saying, look what they're doing. Look at the peg they have to the dollar. They're the reason why we have a crisis.
It's not our fault. It's theirs.
It's their fault. You know, by keeping the yuan artificially low in value, China's effectively giving U.S. consumers a discount at Walmart, okay, on Chinese imports. So by keeping its currency undervalued, China's discounting its own exports, and that's good for U.S. consumers, who get to buy cheaper clothes, cheaper electronics, cheaper flat screens, whatever, and other items. But it's horrible for U.S. manufacturers who can't find the way to compete with these low Chinese prices. So, you know, China's central bank needs to constantly buy U.S. Treasury bonds, and it's for technical reasons. But basically, when all this is said and done, you know, we're keeping an eye on this. As China's economy grows, it must buy more and more U.S. currency to meet the growing number of yuan to keep this arrangement intact. And because China continues to buy these U.S. Treasury bonds, it's allowed us to keep low interest rates. But when all this changes, and we've talked about this numerous times, when all this changes, if the U.S. keeps saber-rattling and finally gets what it needs, it finally says, look, we want you to detach the dollar from the yuan and let it float freely, the ramifications of that we need to be prepared for. But, you know, as I've always said before, the thing to watch with China is this. What happens when their economic power and their prowess turns into and morphs into political power and political prowess? That's going to be a difficult day for the United States. We'll continue monitoring this issue, Jay.
As always, China is an interesting topic here, an interesting subject. All right, well, after this break, we'll be back with our special guest interview with Bob Chapman of the InternationalForecaster.com. Now, you're listening to The Jerry Robinson Show. We'll be right back.
What are you going to do when hyperinflation hits? With gold and silver prices making new highs over the last several months, many investors are beginning to turn their attention to the precious metals markets. Gold and silver can play an important role in balancing your investment portfolio, as it has traditionally offered a hedge of protection against out-of-control inflation, which may be on the horizon in the United States. While Makers Group Financial does not sell physical gold and silver, we do recommend an excellent precious metals dealer. His name is Tom Cloud, and his prices are outstanding. It's where I buy my gold and silver. If you would like to learn more about purchasing gold and silver, please contact Tom Cloud at 800-247-2812. Tell him that Jerry Robinson from The Jerry Robinson Show sent you, and he will throw in free shipping and free insurance on your order. Again, Tom Cloud, 800-247-2812. Be prepared for when hyperinflation hits.
The United States of America is in a state of financial emergency. Today, America's deficits are hitting all-time highs, the global credit crisis continues to worsen, and the U.S. money supply is expanding at a record pace, triggering widespread fears of coming inflation. How did America reach this level of economic chaos? And what can you do to protect yourself and your finances? In this hard-hitting 60-minute live presentation, well-known economist and best-selling author Jerry Robinson explains the real truth behind the falling U.S. dollar. You will learn, from a historical and political perspective, what is really happening to the U.S. dollar, why the U.S. dollar is on the brink of collapse, how the fall of the U.S. dollar may be leading to a one-world currency, when to expect the U.S. dollar to completely lose its value, and finally, you will learn where to invest in order to protect your finances from the coming collapse of the U.S. dollar. You cannot afford to miss this important presentation on one of the most pressing topics of our day. Arm yourself with the powerful information you need to protect yourself in these uncertain times. Order your copy of Jerry Robinson's latest DVD, Death of the Dollar, today. Call 918-827-JRMI. That's 918-827-5764. Or go online at www.jrmi.org.
Well, welcome back to The Jerry Robinson Show. I'm your host, Jerry Robinson, founder and director of Jerry Robinson Ministries International and chief economic strategist at Makers Group Financial. So glad to have you here. Our next guest is a former stockbroker, a financial trader. After retiring in 1988 at the request of business associates and due to retirement boredom, He began writing, editing, and producing his own newsletter, International Forecaster, which offers a wealth of information on the topics of business, finance, economics, social, and political issues worldwide. Now, the International Forecaster, this newsletter I'm referring to, reaches about 10,000 investors and brokers monthly, directly. And part of his publication are picked up by 60 different websites weekly, exposing his ideas to over 10 million investors a week. Bob, it is an honor to have you on the Jerry Robinson Show. Thank you for your time today. Coming to us from Central America, is that correct?
That's correct.
It's really an honor to have you, sir. I have, as an economist myself, I've read your writing for some time, and it's just been a real honor to actually get to meet you today and actually to have you on the program, and look forward to picking your brain. We have about 10 to 12 minutes, so we'll dive right in. But again, thanks for – and by the way, where are you in Central America right now?
In Costa Rica.
Okay, nice. Well, I'm sure the weather there is better than it is here today. So
it certainly is.
Well, good for you. All right, well, listen, in your latest newsletter that you put out, you said that the Eurozone is, quote, far more advanced into their destructive process, unquote, than the U.S. Talk about that. Obviously, the Eurozone versus the U.S. right now is a big hotbed topic. Talk about the Euro right now. What's happening from your perspective?
First of all, both the United States, the United Kingdom, and the Eurozone, and the European Union as well, and they are separate. The 16 countries in the Eurozone used to be 14 at the beginning, and it's 27 countries in the European Union, so people can understand that some countries still have their own currency. They're all in trouble. We have 19 countries that are either in bankruptcy or should be, and are they're approaching it, including the United States, as you mentioned earlier, and the United Kingdom. The problem with the euro began at before the beginning. The Maastricht Treaty, which was signed in Holland about 11, 12 years ago, said that the members should have a debt-to-GDP ratio of 3%. On public debt in each country involved, which was 14 then. And they didn't have any way of really implementing, forcing any of the countries to do that, because if they fined them for doing it, they may just make the position even worse. Now, second of all, they had one interest rate for everyone in the Eurozone, and that can't work. And we've already found that out, but I wrote about that long ago. And the third thing is the cobbling together. And I lived in Europe for years. I speak four European languages. And the cobbling together of the European Union was an unnatural act. Within countries, you have tribes. Within the Union, you got many, many, many tribes. And people might say, well, what are you talking about? This isn't Africa, you know. And I'm talking about people who live in one country who sometimes speak different versions of the same language because of their history. And there's a lot of partisanship and provincialism that exists in each country in Europe. So the anthropological, sociological aspect of making it work couldn't be there. So it was an unnatural bonding of people together who really didn't want to be together. So with that understood, when Greece and Italy wanted to come in, they cooked their books. And Goldman Sachs, as we have found out, were the ones who aided them in doing so. And we find that Greece is really broke. The rest of the union that's solvent, namely Germany, and Holland, the others are kind of on the edge, but some of them are really underwater, such as the PIGS, P-I-I-G-S, which are Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece, and Spain. And they're really all bankrupt. And so we have this terrible situation that's brewing. Germany doesn't want to bail them out, and I don't think the others have the capability to do so. And so what they're going to do is they're going to probably bring in the IMF, and the IMF is going to help Greece by creating a further austerity program, which won't work, could lead to revolution and civil war in the country. And I think they're going to exit the European Union, excuse me, the Eurozone. Now, I think the solution to all of this, and I think what the movers and shakers behind the scenes are doing, is they're trying to decide when we're going to take everybody down together, which gets back to your original question, the United States, the United Kingdom, and then Europe, what are the balance of problems? Well, they all got problems. And I think what's going to happen by the end of next year is going to be another meeting like the Smithsonian meetings in Washington in the early 70s, the Plaza Accord in 85, the Louvre Accord in 87, and they're going to get together and they're going to devalue all the currencies and they're going to default on debt, and there'll be a process to do that, and that will be followed by a deflationary depression.
Okay, let's talk about that for a minute, because that is the greatest fear, a deflationary depression. You know, obviously an inflationary hyperinflation, you know, hyperinflationary depression is bad, but a deflationary depression is probably the most severe thing that can happen to an economy. In your opinion, when and if this happens, what does that mean? We obviously know what that means for Europe and for the U.S., and I say obviously. I think that we can make some observations about that. But what's going to happen to the second and third world countries as these developed nations' economies continue to spiral downward? What's your take on that?
Well, the worst hit are going to be the U.S. and Europe and England, and it'll graduate down from there. Canada has a relatively strong economy, natural resource producer. Switzerland is a money center. I think they'll do relatively good. So if 10 is worse, they'll probably be about fives, maybe sixes. And then you'll go down the ladder, so to speak. Some countries will be relatively unscathed. They'll have a recession. And the reason why is part of the diminution in value of assets that's occurring in these locales with the biggest problems are in residential and commercial real estate, all of which is leveraged by buying and having a mortgage, or in some cases with commercial, you pay interest only for 5 years and then renew your contract. The problem today is the banks won't or don't have the money to renew the contract, so they get the property back. But the point I'm trying to make here is throughout the remainder of the world, most of the world does not use mortgages. They pay cash. So the countries that do pay cash for their homes and their buildings, they won't be hurt as much. And that's very prevalent throughout Latin America and in parts of Asia as well. And so, and in Germany. Now, Germany never had a real estate boom like everybody or many other countries did have, and they're going to be relatively unscathed from that point of view. But I think the fallout, nobody is going to be left untouched. If things are 10, which is worst, in the worst countries, there might be countries that are twos and threes and fours, but they're still going to be affected.
Okay, Bob, break this down to a social level. Obviously, the economic pain that you're describing is going to be very, very, very difficult. A deflationary depression like you're talking about, a debasement of the currency, followed by then a devaluation. I mean, all of this, everything that you're describing, the way that I'm hearing it, let's talk about the social impact of that. I mean, what does that look like in Main Street America? Where do you see America? You mentioned possible civil war in Europe. What about America? What do you think is heading for us socially from all this?
Well, I think in America, the American public, and I would say perhaps 60 to 70% of them are waking up, which, and this has happened within the last year. After I've been at this for 50 years, they're finally catching on. And I think what's going to happen is that we could have a tremendous turnover in incumbents in the November election. If that happens, the public has the ability then to use the legal system to go about making changes that they think are appropriate through the representatives and senators. Now, if that doesn't work, or they can't unseat the incumbents or don't unseat the incumbents, then I see America as the economy continues to deteriorate, which it will. There cannot be any other way. And as it goes down from the 22.8% real unemployment that we have right now, you're going to have disruptions, demonstrations, and it could lead to a revolution. And I think 50% of the countries in the world could go through the same process.
It's just basically astounding. We're down to our final 60 seconds of the interview. I think this is kind of a moot point to ask you now. I was thinking about this Moody's warning about, you know, obviously America's credit rating. We've been saying that's going to happen for some time. I think I want to pinpoint this question down. I think we both know that the United States is at risk of default. Let me ask you to break out the crystal ball and just tell us, when do you think all of this is going to happen? Are you saying 24 months, 12 months, 2 years, you know, 8 years? What do you see?
Well, it'll be within 3 years, and it could very well start toward the end of this year and go through next year. And I think the devaluation process and the default process could come about late next year. And, of course, that's only a qualified guess. You know, people always ask me, well, what do I do to protect myself? You go out and buy gold and silver-related assets. That's the only way you're going to protect yourself.
Well, that's really good advice, Bob. I really appreciate having you on the program, and I'd like to extend the invitation back to you to come back, and we'll be in touch. Really appreciate all your hard work. If you want to find out more about Bob Chapman, simply look him up on the web. Go to Bob Chapman in Google, go to International Forecaster, and he will be right there to guide you through this maze that we see in this financial crisis. Well, on the other side of this break, we'll come back with our commentary and monologue on the topic of the Federal Reserve and how it must disclose bailout funds right after this break. Hi, friends, this is Jerry Robinson. I trust that you appreciate our hard-hitting Christian approach to today's economic, geopolitical, and cultural news each and every week right here on The Jerry Robinson Show. You know, every week my staff and I are hard at work to bring you the most cutting-edge insights to help you understand the times that we're living in. As you know, the Bible instructs us to understand the times, and Jesus even tells us to watch and be sober as we see the day of the Lord at hand. As we look around, most of us find our present-day situation simply breathtaking. And I believe that we are living in truly prophetic times that the Bible speaks directly about. Here at The Jerry Robinson Show, we have a great vision to see God's truth about our generation and our unique times spread across the nation through the radio airwaves. But in order for this important message to wake up our sleeping nation, we simply must have your help. In 2010, we have plans to get this program into several large radio markets right here in the U.S. and even globally. Will you stand with us in our effort to get the truth of God's Word out to America and to the world? Never before in our nation's history have hard-hitting, truth-telling, God-fearing ministries been so important to our collective future. We simply must go forth with the truth. I ask you to prayerfully consider becoming a monthly partner with our ministry with a gift of only $25 per month. You can make your pledge by calling our ministry hotline at 918-827-5764, or you can log on to our website and donate online. Our website is www.jrmi.org. Friends, become a part of the solution and help us confront the lies of this age. Call now, 918-827-5764, or log on to our website at www.jrmi.org. Thank you, and may God richly bless you in your gift. Hi, friends. This is Jerry Robinson from the Jerry Robinson Radio Show. Are you looking for a trusted financial advisor who shares your same spiritual beliefs and values? You know, each month here at our organization, we receive numerous requests for biblically based financial planning advice and counsel. And in response, we've created something known as the Christian Financial Advisor Network. Now, this is simply an organization of Christian financial planners and advisors who provide biblically based financial planning services to clients nationwide. We have now expanded our advising to 27 different states across the country. If you're interested in learning more about the Christian Financial Advisor Network to find a Christian financial advisor for yourself and your family, contact us at makersgroupfinancial.com. Simply go to our website, fill out the form, and we will be back in touch with you within 48 hours. makersgroupfinancial.com.
Welcome back to the Jerry Robinson Show, educating, equipping, and empowering believers to think and thinkers to believe on the web at www.jrmi.org. And if you really enjoyed our interview in the last segment and you want more information from Bob Chapman, go to www.theinternationalforecaster.com. And now here's your host, Jerry Robinson, with this week's commentary on the Federal Reserve must disclose bank bailout records.
Thanks, Jay. What we want to do here is we want to take a look at this latest news that's been coming out regarding the Federal Reserve and its legal battle with Bloomberg. You know, last week the Federal Reserve was ordered to disclose documents that specifically identify financial institutions that might have collapsed without aid from the 2008 bailout program. The order, which was issued by the U.S. Court of Appeals in Manhattan, marks a new development in the ongoing legal battle between Bloomberg and the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this ruling upheld a previous order from August 2009 that ordered the information be released. Now, this unusual legal struggle began on November 7th, 2008, when Bloomberg filed a lawsuit under the Freedom of Information Act against the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, demanding that the Fed release the names of private financial institutions that received public bailout money. And, of course, the Federal Reserve has long claimed that it is a transparent agency and that it has nothing to hide. However, when confronted with this simple request for information regarding the recipients of the financial aid, the Federal Reserve immediately recoiled and began making statements about how such disclosure would do quote-unquote irreparable harm to the financial institutions that needed the Fed's emergency loans during the biggest government bailout in U.S. history. Now, as it became clear that the information would have to be released to the public, the Fed then began issuing threats revealing that the information would endanger the entire economic order of the United States. Additionally, the Fed claimed that its functions should be vigilantly shielded from public and political scrutiny to avoid the institution from being rendered impotent in its monetary policy efforts. While there may be some validity that politicizing monetary policies may not be a positive development, the Federal Reserve appears to be forgetting one very, very important point. The money that they print and secretly hand out to whomever they deem worthy is not theirs to begin with. It belongs to the American people. This money is the people's money. And the money that the Federal Reserve lends out must be paid back, not by the Federal Reserve, not by the federal government, but rather by the taxpayers of the United States federal government, that is, the American people. With the recent bailout, the Federal Reserve has printed and handed out nearly $2 trillion of U.S. currency to unknown entities. And the bill for these loans has been sent to the American people, plus interest, to be made payable to the Federal Reserve. For an organization that is dedicated to transparency, the decision should be clear. Hand over the documents and allow those who have to pay the bill to know who they're paying the bill to. If the reputations of those financial institutions suffer as a result, that is simply unfortunate. But what is even more unfortunate is that the American people and their unborn are now on the proverbial hook for trillions of dollars of financial institutions that should have been allowed to fail due to their excesses through the natural forces of the free market. The tragedy lies right here. Our federal government took a dangerous turn when its first priority became not protecting the American people from future crisis, but instead to prevent any crisis at all. Bush, President George W. Bush, summed up the federal government's problem very well when he stated during a December 2008 interview that he had to abandon the free market principles to save the free market system. The federal government's current fixation upon preventing any financial pain will instead lead to more economic complexities in the future. The Federal Reserve's lack of transparency and further insistence upon protecting the identities of the financial institutions who needed emergency loans is further proof of the intention at the federal level to maintain the illusion of prosperity regarding America's fiscal house of cards. The Federal Reserve should be audited, and its financial activities should be exposed. The fact that the federal government does not have the political foresight or the internal fortitude to demand the Federal Reserve reveal its financial records is just another demonstration of how far our nation has gotten off track from its original founding. In the early 1800s, President Andrew Jackson, cognizant of the danger posed by central banking systems, stated regarding America's central bank then, quote, "You are a den of vipers and thieves. I intend to rout you out, and by the grace of the eternal God, I will rout you out," unquote. Political conviction such as Andrew Jackson's is mocked today by the historically uninformed. Bloomberg's demand for genuine transparency at the Federal Reserve should be applauded. So should the recent ruling by the federal courts. But our public officials who are complicit with the Federal Reserve should be disgraced. Through their actions and their inactions, they have led those that they have been entrusted to shepherd to the edge of the cliff. That's the commentary for this week. On the other side of this break, we have the question of the week and the road to the one world currency. We're on the web at www.makersgroupfinancial.com. You're listening to The Jerry Robinson Show.
New figures released show that home foreclosures in the U.S. had reached record numbers at the end of 2009. And while these large amounts of foreclosures point to how depressed the American economy has become, it also indicates a remarkable opportunity for investors. That is why Jerry Robinson Ministries International has produced a special report on audio CD entitled Explosive Profits in Foreclosures. In this one-hour, cutting-edge special audio report, you will learn about one of the biggest investment opportunities in the United States right now, foreclosed real estate property. You will learn how you can find foreclosed properties to buy for pennies on the dollar, secrets to finding money to fund your real estate properties, why real estate should be considered as an integral part of your investment portfolio, where real estate investments should fit into your overall financial plan, why there are 10,000 foreclosures per day in America, and why Jerry believes more are coming. There's even a special section that discusses how you can protect yourself if you are currently facing a foreclosure. This is a timely resource that will explain in layman's terms that what you should know and do in today's volatile economic times. Remember, times of great crisis produce times of great opportunity to those who are informed. Arm yourself with the information that you need by calling our ministry hotline at 918-827-5764 and ask for your copy of Explosive Profits in Foreclosures. This hour-long audio CD is specially priced at only $14.95, and if you order right now, we will ship it for free. Call right now, 918-827-5764, or log on to our website at www.jrmi.org. Order your copy of Jerry Robinson's Explosive Profits in Foreclosures and get ready to turn the current economic crisis into the opportunity of a lifetime. Supplies are limited, so place your order today.
Hi, friends. This is Jerry Robinson from The Jerry Robinson Show. How are you preparing for your financial future? The reason I ask is because we have a brand new special for the month of March. Our latest DVD, The Death of the Dollar, you don't want to miss this. It's an hour-long teaching given in Tri-Cities, Washington, where I explain why the dollar itself is doomed and what you need to know about it. How in the world did we get here? How in the world did the dollar reach the depth that it has in such a short amount of time over the last several decades? And what should you know about it? What should you be doing? On top of this DVD, we are also offering our most popular audio CD to date, The Coming Gold and Silver Boom and Dollar Doom. This teaching talks about why you should consider gold as possibly an investment for your portfolio. How high do I think gold is going to go? Where should you buy gold? What kinds and forms of gold should you buy, and where should you store it? You know, we're offering this DVD and this audio CD for a very special low price of only $29.95. It's a limited time offer, and we're also throwing in free shipping for the whole entire month of March. Don't miss out. Get this special combination today. To order by phone, simply call our office at 918-827-5764. That's 918-827-5764. Or just hop onto our website. Log in at www.jrmi.org. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to the Jerry Robinson Show. Here are our final segment. I can't believe this show has already almost passed away into the can and onto the internet all around the world at www.jrmi.org, on the web at oneplace.com, also on the web at truthandfocus.org. So glad to have you here along for the ride as we continue on into our final segment where we talk about the road to the one world currency and the question of the week. We actually have two this week, don't we, Jay?
Yeah, two questions, two really good questions this week for you, Jerry.
Let's delve right into the road to the one world currency.
All right, let's start off the road to one world currency. This article came from Bloomberg, dated March 18th. It says here that the central bank gold holdings have expanded at the fastest pace since 1964. It says central banks added the most gold to their reserves since 1964 last year amid the longest rally in bullion prices in at least 9 decades. Data was compiled by the World Gold Council. Now, Jerry, what does this story mean for world gold prices?
You know, I just got to stop for a minute and actually point something out that it's so funny. You know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Remember that old saying?
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny how, you know, on CNBC and on all of these financial talk shows and even in some other circles that gold is bad. You know, gold is just terrible, right? And central banks, by the way, seem to be probably some of the smartest individuals financially in the world. Would you agree?
Well, they seem to get rich pretty quick, don't they?
They seem to be the rich ones among the bunch, don't they? And apparently they're adding gold to their holdings. And it's so interesting that meanwhile, while people are talking about recovery and they're saying, oh, there's a recovery and there's green shoots and everything's going to be okay and it's all great and the home sales and blah, blah, blah. And the meanwhile, they're buying gold. What? But telling us, oh, don't worry about that. It's a stock. Just invest in it for the long haul. Invest in stocks. Invest in those paper assets. Just keep doing what you've always done, and you're going to continue to get what you've always got, which is what? 96% people retire dead or dead broke at 65. So we see that typically, if we don't follow the money, we end up not getting to the truth. Here we are following the money, and we find that central banks are adding to their gold holdings while telling us that recovery is on the way. It's a very bizarre thing to see. It's also similar to many financial institutions. And I gotta throw this in. Many financial institutions, there's a book called The Pirates of Manhattan. If you haven't read it, you gotta read it. And the idea of behind The Pirates of Manhattan is the fact that many of these financial institutions that are out there telling you to buy term insurance and to put all your money into mutual funds, guess what? They don't do either one of those. They actually hold permanent insurance and hold other types of assets.
Yeah, but they're just making their money off of you.
They're basically selling you what they want to sell you and making money off it, but they don't take their own advice. This is what's so amazing, is that also what you often see is people saying, well, go out and get a W-2 income, go out there and get that income. But what do businesses focus on? Cash flow. You know, they understand cash flow. They understand that's a very important thing. And nevertheless, they focus us on assets, and they try to have us build assets. So again, it's a lot of we do this and you do that and we prosper and you fail.
Seems like a lot of bait and switch.
A lot of bait and switch. And so here we have, and I had to go on that little tangent because this reminds me of this. Here's the central bank adding to their gold holdings. It says that they added the most gold to their reserves since 1964 last year. And they bought, by the way, at the top of the market. That's kind of embarrassing for the central bank. Either A, they're buying at the top of the market and just hoping that they're wrong, or B, they know something we don't. They know that this is not the top of the market. They know this is probably the bottom of the market. They think it's going higher. So central banks added the most gold to their reserves since 1964 last year amid the longest rally in bullion prices in at least 9 decades. And the expansion was the first since 1988, according to this story. So how does this play into the one world currency? Well, once again, central banks are commissioned to issue currencies. That's what they do. And as we see gold being used in many central banks, and we also hear about the idea of a move towards a basket of currencies to kind of supplant the U.S. dollar, we can see how central banks are beginning to even get concerned about their own ability to issue currencies. They're actually looking for hedges to protect themselves. We firmly believe that over the course of the next decade or two, that we're going to see a very strong move towards regional currencies, followed then by eventually a one-world currency. We believe that will eventually happen. Not next year, not 2 years from now. It'll probably be a decade or two. But we're keeping our eye on the ball, Jay. And this story is just another little puzzle piece in the puzzle that points in that direction, Jay.
And just another brick in the road. All right. Now it's time for our questions of the week. Again, like I said earlier, we have two of them. The first one comes from Ron Shimono of Issaquah, Washington. He says, "Hi, Jerry. How much of our investments should be in precious metals? I've invested in all the precious metals, including palladium, and it has increased the highest in the shortest period of time. But you've never mentioned it on your programs. What do you think of palladium investments?"
Okay, that's a good question, and we want to be real careful when we start talking about very specific things. We want to make sure that we're not saying that we're recommending this or recommending that, because obviously, you know, you need to do your own due diligence. People need to go out and talk to a trusted financial advisor. They need to do their own research. But China's appetite for palladium is growing at a voracious rate. So anytime China's buying a lot of something, it's usually typically going to be a sign that the price of it's going to be going up.
Well, you know, they do have, what, a quarter of the world population?
They got 1.2, 1.3 billion people over there that are all wanting something, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So China's appetite for palladium has been growing. Production of palladium, on the other hand, continues to fall, mainly owing to lower production by the two major players in the sector. Russia and South Africa are the two top palladium producers. Now, palladium, as the question indicates, has been the underdog of the precious metal sector. Lots of talk about gold, lots of talk about silver. We've talked about those metals. But in the last few months, all this has changed with the introduction of the palladium ETF, an exchange-traded fund. It's PALL. And PALL, this stock ticker symbol, it's an ETF, hit the markets on the 8th of January. That's Elvis's birthday, by the way. You can tell I'm an Elvis fan. The 8th of January, and it's already had an impact on palladium's price. Palladium took a massive beating in 2008, but over the last 15 months, it's been the best-performing precious metal out of all the entire sector, better than gold, better than silver. So the long-term and very long-term outlook for palladium is extremely bright. It's in demand, and production of it is going down while consumption is continuing to go higher. But it is highly speculative. There's a lot of things that can gyrate the market. So yes, I do like palladium, just as I do like gold and I like silver, but I wouldn't necessarily say that I like it better. If you go back several years, you'll see the track record for palladium has not been as good as gold or silver, but over the last 15 months it has. Therefore, I believe it's due for a correction. Now may not be the best time to run out and buy a bunch of it. Jay?
All right, well, that's really interesting. I hadn't even thought of palladium myself. You know, I think gold, silver, even platinum, but palladium, that's just another commodity out there, I guess. Mm-hmm. All right, and our second question this week. This one hits on the topic of hyperinflation. It's from Wade Bradley in St. Charles, Missouri. There's been a lot of talk about the increase in the money supplies, and the Federal Reserve is printing money at a record pace, but so far there really hasn't been any inflation. Do you still believe hyperinflation is coming?
You know, that's a great question, because we have got that and we had to do two questions this week because we had so many that came in. This particular question is very, very interesting because it strikes at a chord that I think many people are kind of wondering. Here, the Federal Reserve is printing all of this money. I'm holding a chart in my hand, which we're going to be showing on our webinar tomorrow evening. It talks about how, and by the way, if you're listening to this, we actually broadcast this the day before, so you'll be able to check out the webinar on our website at www.jrmi.org. It's called Forecasting the Future. But we're going to be talking about how the U.S. government has abused the money printing privileges that it has tremendously, specifically from September 10th, 2008 to March 10th of 2010. The Federal Reserve has increased the monetary base from $850 billion U.S. dollars to $2.1 trillion. That's an increase of 2.5 times in just 18 months. It's the greatest monetary expansion in U.S. history. And so many people obviously ask, if inflation is defined as an increase in the money supply, and if we have an increase in the money supply, where's the inflation? How come it's not here? Because theoretically, it should be here. Well, the truth is that all of this new money has gotten into the financial system, but it has not landed in the hands of U.S. businesses and consumers quite yet. In fact, even though the money supply is exploding, U.S. banks have dramatically decreased lending. So it's a very bizarre and strange situation. The biggest banks in the U.S. reduced their collective small business lending balance by another $1 billion in November of 2009. That drop was the seventh monthly decline in a row of a decrease in small business lending. And in fact, in 2009 as a whole, U.S. banks posted their sharpest decline in lending since 1942. So in 2009, while the money is just flowing out of the Federal Reserve and it's going into these financial institutions, the financial institutions stop lending all of a sudden. The biggest, sharpest decline in lending since 1942. So if the banks are not lending the money to the American people, what are they doing with it?
That was going to be my question. Where's this money going?
One of the things they are doing with it is they're buying U.S. government debt. As you can see from charts of the United States Treasury debt, U.S. banks have basically cut business lending by approximately $350 billion since 2009, and they've purchased approximately $300 billion worth of U.S. Treasury securities. So it's almost an even swap. They're stopping the lending, and they're moving it towards U.S. Treasury securities. The short answer here is that we're heading towards a U.S. Treasury bubble because of all this money flowing back into U.S. Treasuries. So once this money actually makes it out into the into consumption and into the business hands, that's whenever the money supply actually begins to impact the economy, and it actually speeds up what is known in economics as the velocity of money. And as the velocity of money increases, hyperinflation increases. We're still waiting for that money to get in the hands of small businesses. They keep talking about this recovery. The banks have to begin lending for that recovery to occur. And when they do, there's your inflation, Jay.
All right. So it looks like not too far off, I guess. Eventually, they're going to have to start putting that money out there.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, folks, it's been a great, great show again. Thank you for joining us here on The Jerry Robinson Show. On the web again at www.jrmi.org. Don't forget to tune in each week to hear more of the economic impact and news from around the globe.
Jay, it's great to have you on the program today. And don't forget, listeners, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and everything that you need shall be added to you.
Amen.
Views and opinions expressed by the guests of The Jerry Robinson Show do not necessarily represent the views of Jerry Robinson Ministries International Incorporated and Makers Group Financial LLC. Even though these are proven strategies, Jerry Robinson is not a financial advisor and his guests are not legal or tax advisors. You should always consult a trained financial advisor and/or tax advisor before making any financial decisions.